This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
In your town, your suburb. From Casterton to Mallacoota.
From Mildura to Wilson's Pond.
This is where the conversation begins.
Not only am I real excited that my very favorite sneakers could be here with me tonight, but we are all very excited here at MTV.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is the Conversation Hour.
So there's a lot of generational debate at the moment between the millennials and the boomers. They're raging and they are ranging on everything from housing to aged care to education. But stuck in the middle of this debate between millennials and boomers is another generation, and that is Gen X. Apparently, we have no influence whatsoever. Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning, Nick Healy, another Gen Xer. Nick, this is how we're described, right? Young adults in the 1980s and 1990s, Gen Xers were dubbed the MTV generation. They're slackers, cynical, they're disaffected. They're the tale of overeducated, underemployed young people who lament the broken world that they inherited. What's not to love?
Look, I think we forgot we're the best looking generation, the best dressed generation. We had the best music, the best movies. Look, it is really funny that when we unpack everything that's going on with these generational wars that we say Gen X is forgotten in the mix, because you and I both remember we were the generation getting it wrong back when we were young. You know, we were the ones who didn't care about jobs. We were never looking for the gold watch. We weren't buying a house at the right time. We were going to uni and doing arts degrees, Rochelle? What were we thinking?
The debate around.
What were we doing with our lives?
Well, here's the thing, right? We went to uni because we could, Nick,
yeah.
Right?
Well,
and
yes.
It was accessible. I grew up in a very low socioeconomic family in Gippsland. I managed to get myself to university, get a house, do it all on my own on an Austudy wage, maybe a little waitressing cash in hand on the side. But it was easy and accessible to go to university. So we didn't really care too much about what we were studying. We were just able to study.
We were, and it meant that we did things that we were passionate about, but then went on to have careers that didn't necessarily relate to that. I think we've discussed a few times, I have a psychology degree and I've never done anything even vaguely related to that whatsoever. I went straight into doing street press and then magazines and then eventually ended up in radio. It was a completely different path. But even that itself was unusual. We bounced around jobs. We bounced around employers in the way no one else had. We were, to the generation above us, doing everything the wrong way.
The idea of living through a recession, we saw our parents live through a recession. We either had family or friends' families who lost businesses, lost a lot of money. There was fear around work. What sort of work will you be able to do? Longevity in work. We're also the generation that went from analog to digital. I mean, I had a pager. Nick Healy.
I had a pager before the phone. I had a phone where you had to pull the aerial out with your teeth, and that was my upgrade to the pager.
The Motorola brick, right? The big one.
Pre-Motorola.
Oh.
But yeah. No, I had the Motorola bricks as well. But we were that. My first year of uni, it was very, very normal to hand in a handwritten essay because you didn't have the computers at home necessarily. You certainly didn't have a printer. These were very normal things. We saw that transition.
So when you put all of that together, what an attractive generation it is. Do you start to question why we've had no influence, why we're not discussed? When you have the generational debate at the moment, we are not discussed at all. Why? Why is that, do you think?
I don't know. Have we just been sitting here too quietly? I mean, we were
too apathetic.
We were the generation who tended to let ourselves in after school because either we were being raised by one parent or both were working. Were we just used to trying not to make a fuss, just quietly cooking ourselves dinner and getting on with life, that we forget that we're allowed to stomp our feet occasionally.
There's nothing like on your way home from work, stopping at mum and dad's milk bar, getting yourself a video, packet of CCs because corn chips had just made it onto the market.
Fancy.
And then going home and throwing yourself a frozen chicken Kiev in the oven. What's not to love about growing up in the 80s? So are you Gen X? What defines Gen X? What impact do we have? Did we have? And what are the consequences that we're now living through as a generation? What does it mean to be Generation X?
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is The Conversation Hour.
Amongst the generational debate, the millennials and the boomers, why does no one ever debate Gen X? Today we throw that spotlight firmly onto what Nick Healy and I would label the best generation. To join in this, Andrew Mast, former Street Press editor, and Dan Woodman is a professor in sociology at Melbourne University. A warm welcome to two other Gen Xers, although, Dan, I think you're just on the cusp of Gen X.
I'm on the right side of the cusp.
Right side of the cusp. Dan, you have tracked multiple generations into their adulthood. What defines, can you give us a breakdown of what defines Generation X?
Well, I guess the X was originally put there as a kind of sense of we don't know what defines this group, a group lost in the world. But one of the traps with generational labels is they're about a group of people who had certain experiences in a changing world. But we talk about them like they're a star sign, you know, that it's a personality yes. that this entire group of people have. And I tend to agree with that when they're saying nice things about us and disagree when it's not nice. But honestly, from the social science side of it, there's not a lot of truth to a group who all think the same way. But it is a group, and we're talking 65 to 80, although the boundaries are blurry. And if you feel in your spirit you're a Gen Xer, I'm happy to have you.
I've got someone here saying I was born in 1963, so evidently I'm a boomer, but I feel like I'm a Gen Xer.
Yeah, and we had a particular life course that was shaped by the way Australia changed. So in the early 1980s, only about a third of Australians were finishing high school. And then really quickly, we went up to almost everyone, 80%. And that happened in just a few years. And with that, people then started to go to TAFE and uni in much, much greater numbers. And then after spending all those years studying much more than previous cohorts, we then found it hard to get good jobs. And that was part of the reason we did study for so long was the government was trying to deal with a changing labour market where the youth job transitions were just getting harder. But the group of Gen Xers that we've followed, my team, for over 30 years now, they were pretty angry in their mid-20s because they'd done what they were told, basically, and said, look, I expected that to probably pay off a bit quicker than it did. And there was a degree of cynicism there, although over time, we're a bit older than our mid-20s now, and most people have managed to get their lives together. And some of those transitions were really hard. But also, compared to, say buying a house now, it wasn't quite so hard.
Yeah, Dan, it's interesting you mentioned we were angry in our 20s. I mean, you're often defined as generation slacker to a large degree. But we did hold a little bit of rage. We were told to go and do it this way. A few people on the text line saying it wasn't free university, there was HECS. Very, very true. And, you know, you came out with a HECS debt, nothing like what the generations are having to have now. It was something you could actually pay off. But what amazes me is, as we've seen the world change around us, I don't feel like we've maintained the rage. I feel like we've just slipped away. I don't see our generation protesting the things other people are. I feel like if we could be called Generation Slacker now, it's because we have slipped away from wanting to change the world around us.
Generation Tired.
Maybe. Yeah, Generation Tired. And that's it. There is a life course thing here too, where we're in that period where the kids and the parents can be both drawing on our time, that so-called sandwich generation. But also it's just demographically was a smaller group after the baby boomers. And then as we were talking about, you know, as the avocado toast gets thrown across the room between the boomers and the younger cohorts, we kind of get left to our own devices to to discuss which Ethan Hawke movie was the best of all time.
That's a no-brainer, all right? It's reality, bites.
No, it's Before Sunrise. But yeah.
Andrew Nass is someone that worked well and truly in the heart of street press in the 90s. When we think about music, popular culture, tribalism, there was this embarrassment of riches, of clubs to go to, of ways to find your tribe that I feel like maybe isn't there as much now, or maybe it's just I'm well and truly out of that circle. But it felt so dynamic and alive, and oh, the choice was limitless.
Well, I remember in that film, Summer of Sam, and Adrian Brody's character had to make this choice: am I disco or am I punk? And it was a really important question you had to ask yourself. And so as kids, we were listening to disco and punk, but it was being made by boomers. So when we got around to creating our own music, we actually combined those, but we created so many more tribes. And, you know, we had post-punk, we had mod, ska, goth, acid jazz, techno house. We gave the world not just grunge, but hip-hop and the rave culture. Well, hip-hop blew up with the Gen Xs. Mm. But it's interesting when you look back, and I see protest bands or angry bands like Pearl Jam as being a quintessential kind of Gen X band. But I had a look at Eddie Vedder's age, and nope. Boomer.
This says, late Gen X arts degree, I'll never own a house, not enough super, yep, we still have no bank of mum and dad. My best retirement plan is, well, you don't want to say this, some kind of imminent death as I reach retirement age. That's really not, well, there's the apathy that comes from being a Gen Xer. Pete's in Shepparton. Hey, Pete.
How are you going?
Good, mate. Gen X?
I guess this whole situation makes me really sad, to be honest with you. We have debates about race, black, worst of all, we have debates about men and women. Even in your program the other week, you referred to men as being lazy, and then you've got debates about generation. I'm just not sure what you're trying to achieve with these debates. I just feel like it's building animosity and resentment between colour, religion, race, age and gender. I just don't get it. I'm sorry.
Pete, good to hear from you. There's a text here, though, that says, menopause and Gen X on the Conversation Hour in some week. I'm feeling very seen and very at home on the ABC. Let's have a chat to Tony, who's in Footscray. Hey,
hello.
Tony. Hi.
Yes. Well, I think Generation X is hugely important to civilization. I think we're the bridging gap between the boomers and every other useless generation after us. We're the ones that wear our pajamas outside when we go and when we go to the shops, and then we know how to put on an Armani suit when we need to. We're just holistic. We're hugely holistic and hugely important to civilization and informing all those generations after us about how, you know, you need to get behind causes and, you know, and things like that. And we put that into law and everything else. So we're hugely important.
Tony, have we kept up with those causes, though? My point a bit earlier is I feel like we've dropped off that passion.
I get you. I mean, Bono, what's Bono doing? You know, he's not doing much, is he? You know.
He's doing Vegas. He really is.
And Eddie Vedder, I mean, when I heard that he's a boomer, I thought, well, I've been hoodwinked.
I think only just.
Oh, I love that. What's Bono doing? That's probably the most profound question that we've been asked on this program for a long time. Dorothy says, I can't believe this current conversation. Gen X has had the most influence. Yours was the first generation to get early promotions, with boomers being pushed aside earlier than previous generations. Your generation is the one that is in control now, despite all the rhetoric.
Dan, is that true? Were we that first generation to see changes in that employment structure?
Well, so we were that first generation where some post-school education became the norm, and then the pathway into work was a bit slow and bumpy. But now, you know, most of the boomers are retired or not too far away, and we are taking those leadership positions. The last prime minister before our current one was a Gen Xer, our first Gen X prime minister. I think some people thought that we might have to wait a little bit longer, and we've gone back to a boomer now. But they gave us our first shot in the big seat. And if you look at a lot of businesses, the person who's making the calls now is this forgotten generation. So we're not as powerless as some people might make out.
Do we see ourselves as leaders? Do you think? You know, are we a little bit kind of classic imposter syndrome as Gen Xers?
I feel like we were against leadership.
We were against the man.
I remember, I mean, the previous generation obviously had the anti-Vietnam War marches, but I just remember endless anti-nuke protests at uni, just going off to protests every few weeks and protesting against Maggie Thatcher when she came out. So I remember there was that real anger, but there was a suspicion of power, and I think that very much marks what we see in our Gen X, hear in our Gen X music, see in our Gen X movies. It's slackers, possibly, but they were suspicious of power.
That was the premise of Reality Bites.
That's right, yeah. Mm.
That was what it was all about. It was about not working for the man, not cashing in, and
not having role models.
Yeah.
Correct, yes.
But not being a slacker at the same time. Let's have a chat to Adrian, who's in Hawthorne. Hey, mate.
Oh, yeah, g'day, Michelle. Yeah.
Good. What did you want to say?
Well, I'm just going to say that the Gen Xers are the generation who know how to rock out, and we are going to be the best bad influence on your kids and grandkids. I went to a gig a couple of weeks ago, and it was just the only people that were below 45 were the staff, and the Gen Xers, God bless us all, we rocked the house.
Yeah.
We rocked the house.
And we're all coming into, many of us, our 50th birthdays and our 50th year around the sun.
Excuse me.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Some of us have passed it. Dinner
a few years ago.
Flown past it.
And you watch the records, and I say records deliberately, come out, and the kids just going, oh, my God, what are our parents doing? There's a text here from Stuart in Shoreham that says, is Bono really doing Vegas?
Yes. He played the new venue in Vegas. He opened that big sphere. U2 played in the sphere at Vegas, did a long residency there.
Wow. That defines it all, doesn't it?
Well, that's what rock bands do. Oh, that's what all artists do now. They go to Vegas. Our artists that we love, they're all going to Vegas. It's not just human nature anymore.
It is not just human nature. Who I went to high school with, just to throw that one out there. So they are definitely Gen Xers. Hi, Toby. Jason's called in from Grovedale. Jason, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. How are you going?
What did you want to say?
I just want to say I'm a Gen Xer. I was born in 1970. And I just noticed about my generation and a lot of my friends and mates that I still knock around with and that, and they do my head in a lot of the time. Like a lot of the benefits that we started when we were, more of my mates were tradesmen, still are. Went to a tech school where it finished in year 11. We didn't have a year 12, so I didn't know anyone that went to a university or anything. But by the time we started working, we had 4 weeks annual leave. We had sick pay. We had superannuation that had been fought by the workers before that came before us. Our workplace safety had started to improve a hell of a lot by the workers that came before us. You know, the death rate from a construction worker, the death rate was appalling in the 70s. Well, it's still bad, but it's a hell of a lot better now. But I just find they sort of, everything's been given to them. And it just does me head in a little bit that my mates and that generation don't seem to respect
opportunities.
The struggle that came before us, you know.
So you're saying we don't recognise the work that boomer generation did to get all of that happening in the first place?
Yeah, definitely, yeah, yep.
Jason, good to hear from you. You touched on something there, Dan, that I love talking about, to be honest, and that is tech schools. And when I say I love talking about them, I feel sad that we saw the demise of tech schools, because I grew up in the La Trobe Valley where, just like Jason said, heaps of kids didn't finish high school or didn't go to university, but they went to tech, they went on to have great jobs, they had incredible trades. Tech schools and Gen Xers, I feel like, kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely. When the levels of education extended and the government was saying, what do we do now the youth unemployment rate is really way up? And they did invest not just in universities but in tech schools and education in tech schools. And then after that period of the early 1990s where the job market was hard for everyone, the people who got their start then have done very well in their lives in lots of ways. And it is a worry now that when we want to educate even more young people of the Gen Alphas coming through, that the tech schools seem to have fallen off the agenda a little bit.
So we're talking Gen X today. There's a lot of debate currently around millennials and boomers, but smack bang in the middle is an entire other generation that is Gen X. Are you Gen X? If you had to define what we stand for, what would it be? Don't call me
Dora. Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is the Conversation Hour.
Oh, that just takes me to one too many house parties and shared houses. That's something else we'll get to. You can't talk 90s, you can't talk Gen X without including this.
Hello, you've reached the winter of our discontent.
I'm making this documentary about my friends, but it's really about people who are trying to find their own identity without having any real role models or heroes or anything.
It seems like your friends would be perfect for that.
A couple of smokes, a cup of coffee, and a little bit of conversation. You and me and $5.
And just to make us feel old, Reality Bites turned 30 this year. Winona Ryder, Ben Stiller, Ethan Hawke. I did read this wonderful little story that Ethan Hawke was coming home from a big awards night, a big party, stayed at a hotel, turned on the television in the hotel room. Reality Bites was on the telly, jumped in bed and he watched it and he said that the film still holds up. Reality Bites was that film where Andrew Mast, especially as you were editing Street Press in the peak of that film coming out, it was our film. It spoke to us. It said everything that we wanted to say and we felt seen. What was it about that film that cut through, do you think?
I think it was a combination of it was all the it kids, all the stars were the hit people at the time that we all looked up to. We wanted to copy their fashion. They got the music, they got the fashion. And I think it was one of the first films that got the language. They were really quick off the mark to get a language that we were speaking, or otherwise we picked up the language and just convinced ourselves that they were.
They got
the sentiment right, exactly that, yes.
And the fashion was something big in that. Damien Woolen-Now-Reed is the style editor for The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. Damien, if you had to define fashion for Gen X, what would it be?
Oh, well, it's continually being redefined at the moment.
Isn't
as
it?
Current generations mine Gen X. But I just think it was, being from Gen X, it was a lot cooler. this was the time sort of before sort of luxury labels infiltrated our lives. And we were taking our influences from films like Reality Bites, from music. So it was a lot more tribal and it was a lot more personal, I think.
I'm glad you mentioned the tribal, Damien, because I think it was, and it went to something Andrew said a bit earlier, you could have a good guess at what someone's musical tastes were going to be like, at what films they might enjoy, simply by seeing what they were wearing. We really writ ourselves large when it came to our fashion choices.
Exactly. If you were wearing acid wash jeans, you weren't necessarily a clueless kid. it was a very, you know, strong way of expressing what you stood for, what your values were, whether you were dressing preppy or whether you were dressing grunge, or like 80% of people trying to dress like Natalie Imbruglia in Torn.
Yeah, or Courtney Love from Hole, you know. And we were talking about op shops yesterday, and there was this real peak moment, I think, for op shops. I know people were op shopping, you know, when they were punks and whatnot in the 70s, but there was this real moment of grunge, of, I don't know, just that definition of what you wore really symbolised who you wore, who you were more than anything else. And that tribalism is something, Andrew, that was also music as well as fashion.
That's right. You could nearly get away with a pair of Doc Martens with every tribe you were in, though, I think.
Once upon a time, I remember getting my 12-up steel cap Doc Martens. It took me a year of saving up for, but that was my moment.
I even op-shopped Doc Martens once, so that was pretty impressive back then. But there definitely was that op-shop explosion back then.
I feel sheepish admitting I've never had a pair of Doc Martens, but hopefully I'm allowed to stay in the conversation. The Gen Xers were also this kind of first cohort that did have this really kind of stretched out transition to adulthood. So boomers had their youth cultures, but we kind of associate them all, like in the movie Grease, with high school, right? And then people's transition into more adult roles happened quicker. So there was this period of time where we were still dressing in that tribal style as we went well into our 20s, and I think that
some
kind
of us
set,
still holding on to it.
That's what I was going to say, that set the context for us to never give up. But you do see with younger people today that the ability to kind of cross tribes and be part of everything is maybe a little bit more than it was for us, where you had to pick your team a little bit more.
And we had internet.
Yeah.
Well, that was the other thing. We were basing it on what we saw in magazines, not on the internet. And I came through goth into that swamp cap movement, eventually into the vintage suits of the swingers era, and making sure I was wearing my 50s ties. And again, yeah, Doc Martens the whole way. I'm not too embarrassed to admit I've got a pair on now and got four more at home. But Damien, you mentioned that the younger generations are now mining Generation X, and it's always really intriguing to see how history looks upon what defined you. And what are we seeing at the moment, do you think?
I think that there's, like when people look back at any decade, that there's a lot of cherry picking. So initially there was a lot of the pick of sort of the neon prints from the 80s. But what has really stuck now that was very popular back then are the oversized blazers that, you know, most people used to forage from op shops or from their parents' wardrobes. But that oversized blazer look is very in right now. And we're also seeing a lot of the Doc Martens as well, which anchored every look from sort of a grunge T-shirt to a negligee dress. And now sort of still delivering that message of strength today.
It's interesting when you see the 90s. There's some 90s fashion that I just can't bring myself back to, and you even see it in designer labels now, whether it be the style of the handbag or the shoes. But it's amazing to see that 90s fashion is well and truly back. Damien, if there was one thing that you think defined Gen X when it comes to fashion, what would it be?
It's obviously etched onto my brain, but it is Natalie Imbruglia in Torn. It's that sort of mussed up hair, it's the band T-shirt, it's the pants loosely hanging off the waist, and it was sort of an androgynous, strong femininity. It was a covert sexiness, and for me, that was very Gen X.
I love it. Damien, thanks so much. Damien Woolner-Reed, who is the style editor for The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. We touched on something which was the shift from analog into digital. Mm. So we grew up in households where, you know, the phone was in the hallway. If you were lucky, there might have been a really long extension lead on it so you could drag it into your bedroom if a boy happened to call the house. But we remember our first mobile phones. We had pagers. We remember the dial-up internet. How much does that define us now, do you think?
Look, I really feel I mark out my generation when people ask me for an email address, and my backup one that I give out
is a Hotmail.
Is a Hotmail.
Yes.
I've still got the Hotmail. And that just really marks you as part of this cohort, I think. But I didn't have an email until I was 19, I think. It was not at high school. And yeah, I do remember that for me it was you could pull the phone cord just into the laundry and pull the laundry door closed behind you. But the problem was then your mum and dad and your siblings were like, "Who are you talking to?" You know, it was a different world in that we had to organize our lives in a different way. I don't know if you remember, but you used to have to call your friends and say, "Let's meet at this place," like 3 days before, and then everyone had to turn up at that place at that time. You know, so it was a very different way of living your life.
We had that experience with my daughter the other week, where we jumped out of the car. My husband was driving. We were like, "Okay," and we just went, "Yeah, we'll jump out here." Left my phone in the car. And then we realised we hadn't organised where we were going to meet.
Yeah.
I had to drag my daughter around to find a public phone box and then show her how to use a public phone box. And I was like, "Sweetie, this is how it used to be, right? Yeah. This is just how organised you had to be."
I got to say, Rich, I'm a little surprised. I always imagined you as someone with a Garfield phone in their own room. I can just see it in your eyes, but yeah.
I actually did. You know that, don't you?
No, I did not know that. I just actually genuinely thought you would have a Garfield fine in your room when you were a kid.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No. I literally did.
I put it in the main part of the house and made the whole family use it. But when you'd pick up the receiver, which was his back, his little eyeballs would open and close.
Yeah. Look, the other thing when we talk about that digital transition is I think what's important to note is we were the generation that saw a more gentle internet, a more collegiate. You were able to make friends. You know, message boards might have flame wars, but they were easy to stay out of. There wasn't necessarily the abuse that younger generations grew up taking as par for the course on the internet. It was a way to genuinely make friends and connect with people and discover Nine Inch Nails fan sites and things like that.
So you could find your tribe. Yeah. Rob's in Carlton. G'day, Rob.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Good. You're a Gen Xer?
I am. I think we had a really optimistic period there. I remember backpacking around in the mid-90s and end of the Cold War in Europe. And there was just this really peaceful, happy, optimistic vibe going around there after all the dark nuclear stuff, you know, that we saw in the 80s. And it was just a great time to be travelling. And then, of course, September 11 happened. It changed all that. But that's what I found as a Gen Xer.
Backpacking. I had totally forgotten about that. How big was backpacking and just throwing your life in the backpack, heading off? Wouldn't know how long, wouldn't know where you're going. I didn't do it, by the way. That's my worst fear.
Wouldn't know how you were going to pay for it. You know, those kind of things. It was, I was doing the same in the late 1990s, traveling around Eastern Europe. And it was an amazing time because the world did feel like it was opening up for that period. It was also, you know, it wasn't a perfect world. I can still remember frantically explaining that I wasn't an American to people a few times. But it was part of, I guess that's the other thing to remember. This was part of the Gen X experience for a lot of people, but not for everyone. Like we talk about the generation like we all had the same experience, but as the caller earlier on was saying, you know, other divisions in our world also shape our experience. And I was one of the lucky ones who I didn't have a lot of money, but I had enough to, you know, go to 20 countries in a year when I was 20.
I also think it's important to remember we grew up in a fear of nuclear war, maybe not the way they did in the 50s and 60s, but I remember being very, very scared when Gaddafi was on the news that there was a genuine chance of a war. It was something that we took as part of our cycle. I remember it in high school being quite frightened of it.
That was something that you mentioned before, Andrew, like there was protest after protest.
Yeah, but I remember I used to have nightmares of mushroom clouds, and I'd wake up and I'd tell other people this, and they'd go, oh, I had that nightmare as well. And I start to wonder, did we have a group nightmare as that generation? Like it really was a fear that we lived with.
Wayne's in Christmas Hills. Morning.
Yeah, good morning. You know, I'm a baby boomer, I guess, that married a Gen Xer, and we had a generation that you don't mention at all, which is Gen Y. I thought my kids were Gen Y. But anyway, the biggest thing with the Gen Xers is the plastic generation. Huh. I was over the first generation to grow up in disposable nappies and wear them past toilet training age.
There was a lot of disposability in our childhood that we just thought was par for the course. You know, not so much clothing in the way we've got that sort of fast fashion now, but there was a large element of throw it in the bin. It was just there.
Littering. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
I can remember people just throwing things out of car windows. We didn't have recycling. We certainly didn't have more than one bin. The bin wasn't even plastic. You know, it was the old silver bin. So we actually saw recycling come in our lifetime too. And then that was fascinating to watch who's going to accept this change of lifestyle, you know, whether it be going from analog to digital, but also how we waste and how we use things and how we recycle. Yeah.
Well, I remember the kind of Clean Up Australia push when I was younger. In a way,
keep Australia beautiful.
Yeah, that one. It was like we were just working on getting people to put it in the bin, not yet worrying about three different bins. But that seemed to be the big fight Australia was fighting back in the 80s and 90s.
We got Matt on the road and on the phone. Matt, morning.
Good morning. Quickly mention the spontaneity of Gen Xers and how we learned to just take things on the chin as they happened, because we didn't have mobile phones, didn't have texting, so we would just turn up at friends' houses and just think they were home.
And they probably were.
I mean, I
lived in Mossvale in the countryside for a while, and one day my friends and I rode to my girlfriend's place, which was on a farm 20 kilometres away, to see if she was home. And she wasn't.
We rode back. Was she?
Well, she might have been home, but maybe her mum didn't like it. but even when going out, you know, later in life, I lived in St Kilda, and if you couldn't get hold of someone on their home phone, you just went to the George or you went to Tolano's in the hope that your friends would be there after work. And if they weren't, you met someone else.
And there was people there. And I love that idea of having hangouts. And, I mean, there's a couple of mentioned of St Kilda there, but even if it was in the regions, but in the city. But if you look at, I mean, that was when Greville Street was in its peak, right? Yes, and you'd go to Greville Records, or if you're in the city, you'd go to the Virgin Megastore or whatever it was. Music stores played a huge role, I think, in Gen X's identity and life. And like, as Matt said, in our hanging out, like when we were hanging out.
I got my first part-time job so I could save up to buy 145 vinyl every week with that money that I earned at the local milk bar. That was what it was all about. Before that, you had to put the tape recorder in front of the radio, wait for your favourite song to come on, and push play record. I've got a box of those cassettes somewhere at home.
I still have all of those cassettes at home as well, which is embarrassing to admit. The other thing was, in terms of clubbing, in terms of going out, there weren't, you know, as was just being alluded to by Matt, there wasn't a plan. You knew if you went to a certain club on a Saturday night, you'd bump into a bunch of people that you knew. You could just head out by yourself. There was a spontaneity to it. And I do think we forget that. And I think it does sort of, it allowed us to have that time on our own as well, knowing that, you know, we were still going to see people. It's just, it's an interesting way. I don't think we needed that interconnectivity and constant connectivity that generations do seem to need now.
Rochelle Hunt and Nick Healy with you. Also in the studio, Andrew Master, former Street Press editor, Dan Woodman, a professor in sociology at Melbourne University. As we look at that generation in the middle of millennials and boomers, when the generational debate is happening, where does Gen X fit into that conversation?
Yeah!
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
Kick it!
This is The Conversation Hour.
You gotta fight for your right!
No, there will be no singing. I shared a house with a group of guys that were so into the Beastie Boys, it was unholy, right? It was, I think they thought they were the Beastie Boys. Share houses is something that we haven't even discussed. This, I really feel like we are reminiscing. There's a text here that says, oh, the reminiscing of this is just great. Thank you so much. But I say share houses in the sense of it was easy to get a rental. It was easy to just share a house with a group of people. Remember going down to Readings, right?
And yes, that's exactly where I used to place my ads.
I used to place a bunch of randoms that I'd never met and lived just off Rathdown Street. Never met these people in my life, and yet we shared a house for 12 months. It was cheap. It was easy. There was an abundance of places to the point where Readings' entire window was covered in rooms for rent. That's not the case now.
No, people are still share housing, but it's a bit harder to organise, and more people are also hanging out with mum and dad for longer. So the Gen X cohort did again have that period of an extended transition where there was this time for share housing and other things, where the baby boomers before, people still share house, but people move through that period quickly relative, and you know they were getting married and doing other things, but before they had the chance to really wallow in the fifth person through the Readings list to come through in the past 2 years.
And, of course, everything you own could fit in the back of your mate's Kingswood, so it was absolutely fine.
Or you found it on the side, like hard rubbish.
Sue's called in from Port Lonsdale. Sue, good morning.
Hi, how you doing? I feel like I'm the cliche in this story. I lived in North Carlton in shared households. I used to go to the same pub every Thursday night. All my friends would come there and we'd work out what we were doing on the weekend. But one thing I really remember about this generation is moving from the 80s, where I was a teenager, would be baggy clothes and frosted pink lipstick. The 90s for me were fitted black clothes and matte red lipstick. It was,
yes.
That matte red lipstick was everywhere. I mean, on boys' faces, on girls' lips, that was where it was.
Absolutely.
And it was quite a glamorous generation from that point of view. You know, we showed our bodies. We wore matte black tights and sort of looked almost a bit new goth or something.
Yeah, fishnets.
It was so much fun. Yeah, fishnets, yes.
So I wore a lot of fishnets.
I think I did everything you yourself. I'm a cliche.
I know, and I remember that Poppy brand lipstick, and well,
Poppy,
it was so,
Poppy King was so important to that. So
it wouldn't come off portrait, for days.
I remember seeing a portrait of Poppy King in the Kirk, which was an old church that Madame Lash owned in Sydney, and she had bought this. I think it had been in the Archibalds. So there was Poppy King with all her lipstick colours just on the wall of this really bizarre venue.
It stained your lips for weeks. In a week, so it would last, so you could get your 2-for-1 pots at the ESPY and everything would be okay. When we talk about things that changed, I remember for me personally was watching the freedom of my friends and of my flatmates being able to be their true selves and to come out as well. And whether that be having space to have your own club and that tribalism that we're talking about, but I felt like that was a really big moment of being Gen X, and in particular in the 90s. Angela Bailey is from the Queer Archive. She's a committee member there. She's also a photographer and a Gen Xer herself. And what stands out for you, whether it be the sort of late 80s, early 90s and being a Gen Xer and the queer rights and the queer movement?
Yeah, I'm just remembering my futon mattress on a bed of...
Yes.
So comfortable. Not at all like a slab of concrete. Very, very fancy. Very lovely.
Exactly.
Remember the futon shop on Brunswick Street?
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Couldn't afford the base.
And you'd forget to roll it every few months like you were meant to.
And it'd go mouldy, yeah. Right?
I didn't know you were meant to. That was my mistake.
So other than the futon mattress, Ange, what stood out for you?
Okay. Yeah, look, well, I guess it was during the 80s was a lot of seminal sort of things happened in relation to the queer community. So decriminalisation happened, you know, in Victoria only in 1980, in other states. Tasmania was the last to go in 97. But in terms of the queer community also, we sort of, working towards the 90s, we had the AIDS crisis. So there's a lot of coming together of the community to help sort of, I guess, protest with that and care for community. There was a lot of firsts at that time. Victorian AIDS Council was founded. We had our first candlelight vigils. So as we moved into the 90s, we started to really, I guess, rev up that protest for equality, and groups like ACT UP became evident in Australia as well in terms of fighting against the injustice of AIDS and the stigma of AIDS for the community. And then you had Mardi Gras really kicking off as well in the 1990s after, I guess, moving through the 80s, changing its name from gay to lesbian and gay. So there was a lot of the sort of coalition that made it sort of, I guess, get much more of a sense of that broader community.
Well, that's
people
interesting.
People started to come out. Everyone started to come out.
Well, that's what I was going to say, Angela. I feel like based on sort of, you know, friends that I went to uni with, it felt like there was more recognition of striations. More people were maybe willing to come out, you know, pansexual or bisexual than they had been previously. There was an understanding of, I guess, a greater queer community.
Yeah, that's right. And we started to embrace some of those words that had been used against us in the early 90s, like poofter and dyke. And so, you know, you had some celebrities really start to come out as well in the early 90s for, you know, women and men. So
was that represented a lot, Andrew, during street press at the time? Because, I mean, it's interesting, Ange, you mentioned comedians there or you know, big famous people, and lots of people talking about Ellen DeGeneres and even like the D Generation and what they did. In terms of embracing sexuality and pride, that was, I remember pride actually, probably even the word pride and the celebration of pride being really strong in that period.
Well, I worked in queer media as well, Queer Street Press, Brother Sister, Melbourne Star Observer. So I was working, I edited those kind of publications as well as the more music ones. But I was welcomed by the publishers to bring a queer view into the mainstream, the mainstream street press. And they welcomed that. We had queer-themed columns. We'd go into the queer clubs if we were welcome to take photos and publish those. I think it did play a role. And, yeah, I was never told to hold it back or you know, push it aside or anything like that. It was very, very welcomed. And I've got to say, I still have my ACT UP T-shirts from the protests. They don't fit, but I still have them.
Well, we saw some really powerful queer literature come out at the time. And, of course, I think, you know, mid-90s Loaded from Christos Tolkos, which really was quite mainstream for a queer novel.
Everyone read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And some of those street press also, they had the classifieds in them, the queer street press. That was how people, before where we are now, that was how people sort of, you know, started to meet each other outside of the bars and the clubs as well.
I mean, it's interesting. There was one text that just said we had no social media, and the impact that I guess in a great way. I mean, when we look now at some of the fears that we have for young people that we love and that are in our lives, it's the awful impact of social media. We know social media can be good in some ways, but looking at just how we met, how we expressed our views, how we shared those views, I also feel like there was a really great peak moment for drag queens and celebration of drag queen culture and clubs and hosting
RuPaul
events.
RuPaul came out of that era. Yeah.
That was something big too, Ange, that I think we witnessed in that period.
Absolutely. We were, you know, the drag shows were all in the clubs and the bars. You know, we were screen printing our own T-shirts and our own posters for the protests. In our collection, we have a fantastic collection of house books. Do you remember those that sat by the phone? And that was how we all communicated with each other.
Oh, the notes you'd have to leave, yes.
Oh. meet you down the pub at 6. You know, can you please, you know, give me $5 for the wine you drank out of the fridge last night.
And the flatmate that never wrote down your messages, right? Yeah, they'd always forget.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's really great to speak with you. Thanks so much. And by the way, the shop was called Back to the Futon.
That's right.
That was
Back to the Futon.
Someone just sent us a message. Angela Bailey there from Queer Archives. She's one of the committee members. She's a photographer herself. After talking to Ange, you know, we started this show saying, oh, we're this kind of apathetic, whatever. We just kind of took it in our stride. We were kind of rebelling against the system, rebelling against the man, so to speak. And we wanted to do things our way. If we wanted to do degree after degree, we could. But there was a lot of fighting, right? There was a lot of standing up for what we believed in, but also a lot of standing up for what we, for other people. I mean, maybe we had too much time on our hands. Who knows? But maybe we achieved more than what we realised.
Yeah, I think so. One of the problems with these generational labels is we set them up as opposition. So Gen X is different to the baby boomers. They you know, they were the political ones, and then we were more apathetic. And it's not like that. You know, most boomers weren't a protest. Not all Gen Xers were. But the way we did our politics and the causes did shift over time. And we shouldn't forget about all this amazing work that was done by people pushing to make it easier to live authentic lives that went on during that period.
Andrew's called in from Anglesey. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning.
What did you want to say?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was just listening to the comments in relation to the difficulty that, you know, young people have today finding rental accommodation, listening to Andrew and the other share houses, etc. And I thought, well, that's interesting, because I was needing accommodation in Carlton in the early 1980s, and I rang and I moved into a share house with two young women who were both studying at La Trobe University at the time. And 40 years later, Julie and I are still together.
Oh, see, this is what happens. I'd totally forgotten about share households. And this one that was in, that I found off Reading's window in Rathdown Street, I'd moved in, but they were identical terrace houses. And I'm classic. I forget my keys all the time. So the second day I moved in, I'm like, I forgot my keys. I'm knocking on the door. This person answers it. I didn't really know my flatmates, right? So I just kind of went, hi, and sort of just pushed my way in. Got halfway down the hallway and went, I don't think this is the house I live in. I don't know these people at all. And I was in the wrong house. Like, this is...
Rochelle, this is how we met new people before social media.
Barged in.
But I've forgotten about all this. There's text here, like, from Marcella, who says, oh, hello to you all. Thank you so much for bringing back so many great memories. I've had such a great chuckle reminiscing about my youth in the 90s. I guess my final question to you, Dan, is we talk about the influence that generations have had or will have. Mm. What's our influence as a Gen X?
Oh, that's a big question, and I don't want to just fall into those stereotypes of thinking my generation is the best ever. You know, apart from the music, which is objectively
true.
But apart from that. But I do think, as we've talked about already, this was an era in which there were lots of challenges about building an adult life that we went through that have kind of gone on for future generations. But we did also open up some new pathways that people in the cohorts that have followed us have been able to take up and make their own and push further. But I think that's really something that this cohort was part of.
There's a text here, Andrew Master just said, bands everywhere, every night of the week. I miss that. There was a plethora.
I remember you'd go be out four or five nights a week, and I remember one night hitting four band venues in one night. I don't think you could do that anymore. It was incredible.
Yeah.
And we had such a good scene here during that period
Melbourne.
We were spoiled rotten.
Oh, we were so young, weren't we? Where we could actually go out four nights in a row and not feel it for the next week.
Yes. You did not feel it. And Sydney was a very similar thing. You could just, and occasionally you'd just be in a pub and a band would set up and you'd just stick around and listen. And it was a way to discover music in many ways. You weren't there deliberately to hear them, but they were great.
Oh, I cannot keep up with the text saying just thank you for the memories for this. I have loved this. I loved this period in my time as well. Andrew Mast, the former street press editor, who we actually did some time together at Beat Magazine. We
did some time.
We go way back. Dan Woodman, professor in sociology at Melbourne University, both Gen Xers. Thank you so much for your time today. Nick, do you feel like you've purged?
I feel really good, and I'll just give a shout out to the texter who said, stop behaving like boomers and reminiscing about the good old days. Sorry, but we had to get it out.
I'm going to go home and watch Reality Bites. Just saying. Nick Healy, today was fun. Thanks, mate.
This was ridiculous. It was great.
It was ridiculous. Pretty much sums it up. Don't forget, the Conversation Hour is also a podcast. Go to the ABC Listen Up. Take care. Speak tomorrow.